WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN FM HD1, New York, and Odyssey Sports Station. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan and the CBS Sports Network.
Ford Tough Studio, Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network and wherever you are in the free Odyssey app. Good Wednesday morning, ugly night of baseball for the Mets and the Yankees as we get closer to the final month of games and everything feels like a bigger deal, even though one game is one game is one game, but I don't think either the Mets or Yankees fan base really knows what these teams are going to do when it really matters. I don't know if this Yankee team is going to turn into a juggernaut and be able to hit their way or mash their way through the playoffs and have enough pitching. I don't know if the Mets are going to wake up and look like the offensive team that they did a few months ago or about a month ago when they were winning all those games. I don't know. I don't know what they are. But baseball's a funny game. A smart man told me that once. Baseball's a funny game. You never know what's going to happen. Plenty of that and more on this Wednesday in August, the 21st. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning there, Jay. I'm doing great. And I have to say this. Here we are late in August, and both teams before the game, I mean, you could feel it. You could feel like it has a playoff atmosphere. Both teams have that. Now, Jose Quintana has been a disaster lately, and you know, all of a sudden the Mets get behind big and try to make a run at it, coming late back into the game. And then you have Soto and Judge going back-to-back early in the game against Cleveland. So like the thing that I appreciate about this is that, you know, for one quiet night, I can go back and forth. I can watch both games, and both games actually have meaning to them.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. That's what we said. We always say that in April. Please be relevant in August because these are the dog days. These are the days before the NFL starts. And these are the days where, you know, these games have got to matter. And they obviously both do matter. And you can tell by the way both teams are playing. The interesting thing from the Orioles perspective, if you take just one, the amount of injuries that they have is ridiculous. And the fact that they're still hanging around and they're still playing, you know, the brand of baseball that they're playing, I mean, this is the time where the Yankees should be passing them.
Well, I mean, think about that. Also, for both the Yankees and the Mets, the team that is the biggest pain in their neck are both dealing with massive injuries this year. The Baltimore Orioles for the Yankees and the Atlanta Braves, who the Mets are chasing with, like many other teams, for the final wild card spot. The Atlanta Braves, and they lose Austin Riley. So, I mean, there's been a lot of injuries with both of those teams, and they're hanging around, and you feel like it should be the Yankees looking back at the Orioles with the Yankees being five games up, or it should be the Mets that are three games up in the final wild card over those teams, but they aren't. Now, still over a month to go, but yeah, I mean, if you think about, you know, when these teams, well, some guys are going to be out for the year, but it feels like both the Yankees and Mets should be in a better position than the teams that have suffered all these injuries.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on in the Yankee game last night. It was the longest game in Major League Baseball this year. And it was just going on and on and on and on and on.
For 4 hours?
Yeah, this is like a throwback game to 5 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
But it was intense, you know, and it's got that playoff-type atmosphere, and Cleveland's got a really good team. I mean, you know, you talk about a small market team and a team that just seems to, every year, be competitive. I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series, but they're always competitive. They do a great job there. They're in that weak division, so they tend to dominate. I think they tend to, I don't know, I have to look at their record. I would think that they dominate that division. But, you know, when you see them up close and personal, I mean, they're a good, solid team. I mean, they have good players all over the field. And, you know, last night was a frustrating one for the Yankees. I mean, you could say the same thing for Cleveland because they had men in scoring position the whole damn night. But I don't know, like just the intensity of both games, you could feel it. And because it means a lot to all four teams that are playing right now with about 5.5 weeks to go in the season.
I mean, isn't it amazing that we have 5.5 weeks to go in the season? We've seen the hundreds and hundreds of baseball games throughout 2024 at this point. And I mean, I have a better handle on who I think the Mets are
And they're a team that I don't think will make the playoffs, but if they did, I wouldn't be totally shocked, and they'd probably have an early exit if it did happen.
Been against that since the season started.
Right. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But, I mean, if it happened, I wouldn't be like, oh, my God, this is the craziest thing that ever happened in the history of the game. But I still don't think they're going to end up making it.
What would be crazy if they made it to the NLCS?
That would be crazy. World Series. That would be nuts. But with the Yankees, I still, after watching this team, dissecting this team, taking the calls, going through the entire summer and spring and everything, if they got knocked out immediately in the postseason or they won the World Series, neither one of those things would surprise me. I don't know who they are or what they are or how they're going to play in the biggest moments. I have no clue.
Are you sure?
I don't even think the fan base has any idea. Like, if the playoffs started tomorrow, would you... I'd be just as surprised if they won the World, or just as, I guess, not surprised if they won the World Series as if they got swept.
I mean, I think of the great Denny Green coaching for the Arizona Cardinals, playing against the Chicago Bears on a Monday night.
Yeah.
And we cannot attribute that statement from the great Denny Green towards any of these teams around here, because we don't know who they are.
We don't know who they are.
We have no idea who they are.
Right.
But I'd like to think that I have been steadfast in my support of the fans out there, their beloved New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried to support them. I've tried to say that they are making to the World Series. And I haven't tried to say it. I've actually said it, that they will make the World Series. And I am not backing off of that just because of one lousy 12-inning
loss. No.
I'm not saying. I kind of know who they are. I think with Soto and Judge in there, I know who they are. I mean, this is a team that's built for October. That's all I'm going to tell you. They're built for October.
Are they?
They are.
With that bullpen and a closer who is, I mean, he was good last night.
He was good last night. He was fine last night.
He was, but still shaky.
Hey, listen, they may have to ask him to close maybe about four games.
Here we go.
Do four games. That's all.
Man, usually this happens more like September 21st, not August 21st, where the they turns into we with the New York Yankees.
Well, I mean, we are New Yorkers.
Yeah, of course.
And there was a tinge of that during COVID when the Islanders went to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
There was a tinge, a tinge.
Right.
I mean, I was interested.
Of course.
You were interested.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Al was even interested.
No, he wasn't.
Eddie was interested. Yeah. Al was interested. He was not interested
in the New York Islanders.
Who did they lose to?
Here we go. Who did they lose to?
It doesn't matter who
Hurricanes.
They lost.
No.
Close, though. Close.
No, not very close.
Yes, it is close.
How is it close? It's a completely different city, state, team.
But they're in the same division. But they're in the same division. They're actually in a different division. Al.
I will say, when the Rangers are in it, I'm interested. Islanders.
Yeah, but this was COVID bubble stuff, man.
He doesn't remember.
You were so into it. We talked about it because you love Matty Martz.
You're a big Matty Martz fan.
Yeah, you're a big Matty Martz fan.
As BT would say, take the L on this one.
I'm not taking the L on this
one. Al did not care about the COVID Islanders. Stop. He didn't.
They kind of represented New York. They kind of did. Not kind of, they did.
It's a weird memory you have of this time.
But there was nothing else going on.
Yeah, I know.
Like Kyrie Irving quit on the Nets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we argued about that a little bit. Kevin Durant wasn't playing.
Yeah.
Nothing was going on with the Mets and the Yankees.
Right.
Really?
Right.
I mean, you know, at that time, it was all Islanders all the time. I mean, that's what I felt like.
All right, so why are we talking about this again?
Just talking about the Yankees making it World Series and representing New York.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, representing New York. Well, I will say that we do need another championship team in this city. It has been a long time.
You might get
one
with the Liberty this year.
Oh, we're going to get one with the Liberty. Yeah, they're smoking everybody. But
yeah.
It doesn't seem like people are paying too much attention to it.
They won last night, the Liberty?
Yeah, they killed them. They killed, what did they play, the Sparks, I think?
No. The Sun played the Sparks in Boston Garden, by the way.
Oh.
19,000.
Ooh. Wow. And they are either one. I don't know. Is anybody on those teams that we would know? The Sparks? Like, I know at least a handful
of Sparks.
W.
You're talking about the Liberty.
No. We're talking about the Sun and the Sparks that moved to Boston Garden.
Their number one draft pick, Cameron Brink.
She's
from
hurt.
Stanford. Yes, she's
hurt.
Out. So
I know
am
her.
Not familiar.
Look at you guys talking WNBA like
That's
you
right.
know the inner workings
well,
of
I'm
it.
Curious.
And you guys right now are in the weeds of the WNBA.
Not really. I said,
yeah,
is there anybody on these teams that I would know? I don't know if that's in the weeds, per se.
Well, Eddie's in the weeds.
But I don't know it. the reason I'm asking is that we've seen Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, the Vegas Stewart. Team that have been, you know, Sabrina
Asia
Ionescu.
Wilson, Sabrina Ionescu. Yes,
right,
yes.
We've seen those players really lift the league and get sellouts. I don't know if
Caitlin Clark has lifted the league.
Well, of course, her. Yes, I mean, she's the number one. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I think I said her first, I would think.
I think you did. I mean, she's really the one.
But do the Sun and the Sparks have any of those players on there? I don't think so.
The Sun have, I think their best player is Bonner, I believe her name is. Well,
that's in the weeds.
That's weeds. In the weeds. I'm telling you, man. Eddie is in the weeds.
Definitely in the weeds.
But they just said they felt the demand, and this was not an Caitlin Clark game, and they were.
That was nice.
They moved it today, and they sold it out.
That's pretty good. That's impressive. That's very impressive. So, yeah, if it's not the Liberty, it's got to be the Yankees. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And if it's not the Liberty and it's not the Yankees, then it's got to be the Jets.
The Jets.
And then if it's not the Liberty, it's not the Yankees, and it's not the Jets, and it's got to be the Knicks. And then we start all over again. Right?
Yes.
And then on and on and on and on and on. I will say, though, I feel like in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe 7 years, this time in New York sports, there are more teams that you could project actually winning a championship than there has been in about 6 or 7 years. Yankees, if you want to throw the Liberty in there, you can.
You got to throw the Liberty in there. I mean, they're playing sports.
Jets and Knicks.
Right.
I mean, all those teams are legitimate contenders.
I want to make sure that I'm accurate. The Liberty crushed the Dallas Wings.
Oh, the Wings. Well, yeah. The Wings stink, right?
Yeah, they
are the worst team in the league.
They're 6-20. Look at that. Jeez. So are you sneaking WNBA like highlights in your office?
Like Mike Francesa used to sneak the M&Ms, used to put them in his back pocket and pretend that they weren't there, and he'd like sneak them and eat them in the newsroom. That's sort of what I'm doing with the WNBA. I'm like,
he would
sneaking.
Put M&Ms in his back pocket. Who puts M&Ms in their back pocket?
He would. They're in the package.
Oh, okay.
And he'd like. He would get him out of the vending machine, and then he'd like take like he'd keep it in his hand so he couldn't see what he was doing. He'd like put it in his hand, quick to his mouth, and he put the rest in his back pocket.
What's wrong with it, eating M&Ms?
Well, he just didn't. It was probably like just like that video of him when they came back early on Yes, and he was eating that giant ice cream, and then he like took a piece of paper and put it in front of it because he didn't want people seeing him eat ice cream.
I mean, we eat stuff all the time.
You know? I know, but he obviously was, you know. Self-conscious about that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's what was going on. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. You know what it is I watch, and I come in and sit down, put the TV on, and because the WNBA's got some
juice,
they put the highlights everywhere. So then I end up consuming it unintentionally. Just shows you that the media is in control of our minds.
Yes, they are.
I'm not seeking this out.
It's right in your face. It's right. It's right in your face.
And now I know the record of the Dallas Wings. Because of this, they told me it's important. They told me to pay attention to the WNBA. They told me to pay attention to the DNC. They told me to look into this rogue water spout off the coast of Sicily. They told me. No, sorry, I don't know.
All right.
But, that's how it happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not like I'm seeking it out. It just ends up being there in your face.
It's right there in your face.
It's in there in your face.
In your face, 100% in your face.
Yeah. So, all right. So you think that at this point, if I'm getting this take right from you this morning, at this point, you would like all New Yorkers to throw their support behind the New York Yankees so we can be on the same page with something? Is that what you're saying?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
I'm just saying right now, like I'm holding true to what I have been saying all year long, that the Yankees are built for the World Series.
You really believe that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean,
have you seen, I don't know if they got two of the best hitters we've ever seen. I don't know if, yeah, see, now I know that you now noticed, because you just said it, because they have two of the best hitters back-to-back in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't acquire Juan Soto to flame out.
You don't.
You know what I'm saying? You acquire a guy of that stature to throw all in.
You go all in.
Not flame out. You're all in.
Well, you got Luis Gil, who's on an innings limit to begin with, now leaving a game because of lower back stiffness.
I almost took today off because of tightness.
You did?
I was going to call in to Al and say, hey, Al, I'm taking the day off because I got tightness.
General soreness?
There's a lot of tightness going on around sports these days. I've seen it, you know, in the NFL.
Like, oh, yeah.
Devontae Adams had tightness.
Tightness. My favorite is general soreness, though.
Alvin Kamara had tightness.
He had tightness, too?
And now we got all sorts of tightness happening all over the place.
Yeah.
I literally thought about it at 4:15 this morning. Just call Al up. Al, I'm a little tight. I don't think I can make it. You know, but I figure since I'm just sitting down for 4 hours,
yeah,
I can somehow get through it.
Yeah, I mean, I think yesterday I had, let me see how many steps I had yesterday. It might be under 1,000.
You know what? It was cold yesterday morning.
Yesterday, I might have had under 1,000 steps yesterday. I did not move at all. Like, I didn't, let's see. All right, so days, 2,242. That is horrendous. That is
What's a normal day for you?
8,000.
When you're shuffling from here to your office.
8,000. Usually a normal day for me is 8,000 steps. That's my average.
And if you have a round of golf, well, you're usually in a cart. You know,
yeah. Come on. Let's get
that's where
cart.
You need to walk.
Yeah, I don't want to. I just like riding around in the thing. Actually, I think I'm walking tomorrow, believe it or not.
All right.
Not my choice, but I'm walking. So, yeah, but 2,000 steps, I did nothing. Because it was a long, long day out there in Jersey, man. Jersey sucks the life out of me. You know what I'm saying?
It does, especially coming back through that traffic. And even if August is light traffic, it's still traffic.
I mean, I felt like I was away from home longer in 24 hours in New Jersey than 8 days in Italy. Like, when I got back home after 24 hours in Jersey, I was like, wow, jeez.
Did they throw a welcome home party
for
you?
Yeah, there's balloons and everything. It was great. Cake. It was awesome.
I mean, you went from southern Jersey to central Jersey. And then back to New York. It's brutal.
Rough, man. I don't know how I'm here today. I should have been taken off.
Back tightness.
Back tightness and exhaustion. He's out today due to New Jersey. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Jerry joins us in just a couple of minutes.
It's the morning show with Boomer and Geo.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yes, you can.
You know, I'm a Met fan, you're a Met fan. I think Jerry's just a baseball fan in general, right, Jerry?
Correct. Well, he's a Met fan this year.
Yes, I am. Well, for a gambling reason. Al's a Met fan. Eddie's a Met fan.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some really hardcore Yankee fans here.
Yeah.
BT being one of them.
Yes.
And I saw BT, like, walking around on the field last night pregame.
Yeah, so
he went over to dap up a guardian.
What
was he dapping up guardians for?
He did. Well, first of all, I have to say, and I'm not trying to be funny, BT looked great last night on the field. He had this like white vest and these slacks.
Yeah,
He looked
like he was a Yankee personnel guy.
Yeah,
he was dressed with the dark blue shirt and black pants, and he had the white vest on.
I mean, I'm telling you, you know what he looked like? He looked like a former championship Yankee who came back.
Yeah, he keeps himself in great shape.
I know.
How he does.
I gotta say, man, I was like, look at this guy.
Now, when he goes over to the Cleveland Guardians dugout, I couldn't see who he was dapping.
I couldn't tell either.
Does he know the guy, or is he just going over there walking on the field like, hey, yeah, I'm Mr. Bitchin' over here. How you doing?
I think the latter. I don't think he knows that person personally, whoever that player was.
I know the guy. He looked like he walked up right over to him and knew him.
I don't know.
He played at Marist with him back in the day?
Maybe.
BT's 50 now.
Or maybe he went to Marist and there's some sort of connection.
I don't believe that the guy he dapped up went to Marist.
I don't know. I'm trying to... I don't know.
Yeah, I don't...
Hey, Al, could you tell who he dapped up for the Guardians?
I'll have to look into that. Not off the top of my head. I don't know that guy.
I didn't see this. I saw Keith McPherson post the video of BT on the field with the John shirt. I didn't see that part.
Yeah, did he throw out the first pitch? Like,
no, he was representing the radio station for John Sterling night.
Oh, he was.
Yeah,
nice.
Correct. Yeah, I can't. I don't know. But BT, I think it's just whoever was there was getting the BT pound. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I get it. Okay.
That person was just happened to be in the way of his BT-ness.
Okay.
His BT-ness.
Like he was going to dap somebody up on the Guardians, and that guy just happened to be the closest.
Hmm.
So he just like walked over and dapped him up, man. Like, hey, good luck tonight. And guess what? They won.
Yeah, I can't even find anybody on this roster that's from New York or New Jersey. So that wouldn't even count. It would have to be it would have to be either what you said. It was just whoever was there was going to get
the BT dap.
Yeah, or there's some connection to Marist or something like that.
You really think there's a connection?
No,
to Marist?
I don't. I don't. Scott Barlow is from Connecticut. He's one of their pitchers.
That was not Scott Barlow. Okay, he dapped up.
He looks like Boomer. Check out Pedro Avila.
Pedro Avila? Yeah,
it looks like
he's from Venezuela.
Yeah, I don't think BT knows him.
So I think it's probably what you said. This is probably more about...
Yeah, he just got in the way of
what
the BT freight train, you know?
Yeah, but BT, I mean, Pedro is sitting there on the top of the dugout. I mean, what is BT doing by the dugout?
He was on the field. He was like part of the celebration last night.
Because Venezuela won their Little League game?
Yeah, I don't think... I'm telling you, that guy just happened to be the guy who was there.
Because he did not look like he knew BT.
No.
He was like, hey, how you doing? Hey, I'm right over here.
All right. It's like basically like when I see somebody that I've never seen in the newsroom before here, and I feel like they probably know the show, and I have to say something to them, and they're in my general vicinity. That's what it was like. It was like, hey, man, what's going on? And then you would think that I knew the guy forever, but I'm just being nice.
Right.
I think that's what BT was doing. Like, he's just feeling it. Here's a Guardian in my way. Hey.
The Guardian was not in his way. He went out of his way to go to see the Guardian and dap him up. Like,
he was giving kids advice, too. Look at this.
Well, that's all good. I'm glad he was there representing his station. I'm just wondering why he's dapping up a Guardian. I figured he knew the guy.
No.
Maybe he covered him somewhere.
I'm telling you, guys are looking way too much into this.
Was that part of the thing, the kid thing with the advice?
Was that- No. It was he was just there talking to some kids in the crowd. That was all.
Figure it out. That's exactly the message.
I may try to get that exact outfit that he has. I'm that jealous of that outfit, and I'm not kidding.
I know you're not kidding because you.
He looks great so in this good, thing. Yeah. Look at him. I'm like jealous.
I think he kind of actually looks like a Yankee front office guy. Maybe he was going over there to give the Guardians the impression that maybe we're looking at you to trade for you in the offseason or sign free agent.
Oh, I love it.
I would like to see him in the old-timers game. I bet you he could hang with those
BT?
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got some back issues, though, I think. But
yeah, but he could swing a bat. Launch one into the seats and left.
Who was the other person that was holding the T-shirt? Did you see this?
I don't know because the Keith McPherson post, I couldn't hear who that guy was, but I did hear very clearly, you know, representing WFAN Brandon Tiernan.
How old
does
that guy look?
Maybe the sponsor. Whoever made the shirt, perhaps that donated the shirts.
The
company
made the shirts.
Yeah, we did. We made the shirts, didn't we?
I don't know. Then I have no idea.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of questions.
We ain't paying for anything.
Questions.
Yeah, he's up. We could call him if you want.
Who's up?
That's true.
He's probably doing push-ups right now.
Brandon? Yeah. He'll be on his way in soon. He gets here at 8 o'clock.
Okay. Yeah, we can ask him. Yeah, I'm curious. But if you want to send a representative from the station to the
Yankee, that's a good guy to send, man.
I mean, you would look at Brandon and be like, wow, they really got things together over at WFAN. You know, meanwhile, I got Zoo and Gallo and others and Evan and like
Sean.
Yeah, Sean. But when you see BT, like, wow.
I think you send Tiki or BT.
Yeah, both those guys.
Yeah, that's good.
And when they were working together, that was a great show to send out together.
Great representation of us guys.
Like, wow.
The problem is the Yankee fan doesn't see Tiki and think Yankee fan. They know BT's a Yankee fan.
True.
If they listen.
Yeah, but that's okay, though. But they look good. We don't care about what about fan. We just want guys to look good.
Well, Al looks good. We're not sending him.
Well,
not what?
It's different.
What?
It's different, though.
And Keith looks great, too.
Yes. Yes.
And Keith called the game, and the bleacher creatures were calling his name.
Yeah, we just need to send those three guys out to everything, and they'll be like, man, WFAN has got it together.
WFAN is lit.
God.
That's on fire with some of these guys.
We can send Lou Gehrig Marash out.
Yeah, that's different.
That's like a test.
Lukey!
All right, Jerry, what's going on over there?
We are brought to you by The Farmer's Dog. Fresh, human-grade dog food delivered right to your door. And by Jackpocket. Order official State Lottery games on your phone with Jackpocket. Since we're talking Yankees, let's start right there because they were tied. They used all their relievers. Luis Gil was injured, and things didn't end so good.
0-2 pitch. Reach for, looped in the air, right center field, coming on Soto. He reaches for it, and it gets past him. This is going to roll all the way to the wall. One run scores, two run scores. Here comes Freeman. He's going to touch home standing up. Over at third base with a bases clearing triple is David Fry.
And I put them up by, I think it was four at that point. 9-5 would be the final score as the Guardians beat the Yankees, scoring six runs in the 12th. We mentioned Heal. He left in the fourth inning with back tightness. That said, he wasn't doing so good. Three runs, three hits, six walks. Just pitching into the fourth inning. Here was Heal through a translator. The back issue just kind of flared up.
Yeah, I never felt anything like that, you know. And yeah, you're a little worried because, you know, you come out of the game because you're feeling something that's not right, you know. But at the same time, you just got to take it day by day and see how I feel tomorrow.
It's amazing. A guy that looks like that physically.
Has a back issue.
Yeah, back issue, man. Young kid, man, had a great season thus far. Many people think he's going to be the rookie of the year in the AL.
Maybe he thought it was enough. Like, I don't have it. Get me out of here. My back's bothering me.
You got him faking injuries.
I'm not saying that, but I'm not. I wouldn't be surprised if some have in the past.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like, you're killing your team. You're walking the ballpark. Even Paul O'Neill was saying last night, because when John was on with Michael and Paul, they were talking about John was discussing how he watches every night and watches all games. And I guess at one point, Michael asked him, what's the biggest thing you've noticed? And his takeaway was, no one wants to throw a strike. They just nibble. They're afraid. And Paul said, you know what it's like when we're out there in right field? He goes, you want to pick grass because it's so boring. Maybe he couldn't throw a strike and figure, let me get the hell out of here. Who knows?
No, figures John shows up and there's a four-hour game. Did you think he stayed for the whole game?
I don't.
And by the way, did he call? Did he call?
Yes,
20?
He did. All right, so let's get to that.
Well, here's a 2-2 to Volpe. Swung on and ripped toward the gap in left center field. And that ball's a base hit. Going all the way to the wall. Rounding third is Trevino. The throw won't be made. It is an RB double for Anthony Volpe up the left center field alley. And the Yankees have tied the game at three.
It's RBI, but it sounds great,
though.
Yes, it is. That made it 3-3, which is why we went to extra innings. Now, interesting, so I thought John sounded great.
Of course he did.
Very good here on The Fan. That was one of his two innings he did. So interesting, that was the Volpe highlight, because earlier in the day, John Boy had Aaron Boone on, as he does, and John Boy's all over Volpe for this terrible offense. Below average. So here he is talking to Boone.
He's great defensively, so that allows, don't need him to be a juggernaut offensively.
Great.
But he's been...
most important spot. Come on, man. This guy's a player. You're like, yeah, the defense is great. We acknowledge that. Like, that's enormous. He's the best shortstop in the league.
And then he would continue to defend them.
He's hitting like a league average or below league average hitter.
Well below, yeah.
Add it all up. He's a winning player. Like, stop it.
Thank you, Aaron Boone. That's the way you protect your players, especially your young players. And he is a winning player. I agree with him 100%. So he's had a bad month or two hitting the baseball, but he's playing solid shortstop.
This is still a team that's 20 games over .500.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it,
well,
but they are.
The second they got Juan Soto, it meant they got to go to the World Series and they got to win it. So that's why every Yankee fan looks at this season through that lens.
But you said something I've been saying for weeks, too.
I don't know who they are.
Exactly. And yet they're 20 games over .500, but it doesn't, I don't know. They don't feel like a championship team.
By the way, before I forget, Verizon client was the man with BT. Chris Flood from Verizon. Chris Flood from Verizon was the man out there with BT.
Any relation to Kurt?
Don't think so.
Okay.
Then there are the Mets.
The 0-1.
swinging a little flare to left, charging in. Nimmo still coming, slides down, can't get it. Mullins held up. The ball rolls along the left field line. Mullins rounds third, coming to the plate. Nimmo's throw not in time, backed up by Young. Throw to third, gets away from Vientos down the line. Here comes Henderson trying to score, or at least Mountcastle, and he scores, and going all the way to third is Henderson. Wow. Two-run score, and the Orioles go up 9-5.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's
Hi,
a lot
I'm Howie Rose.
That was a lot, and he called it beautifully.
I mean, I don't know how Brandon Nimmo doesn't catch this ball.
Well, that's why he took responsibility for it. He said, that's my fault. You got to catch the ball. I agree.
And then it becomes like the Follies.
Just awful.
I'm going to say something that my high school football coach used to say, and I never understood the reference because I never saw the TV show. Keystone Cops.
Yeah, now you know what it looks like.
I still don't know what that means.
Bunch of clowns running around in circles, basically.
Exactly.
I mean, I know what the reference is. You look like the Keystone Cops was generally when, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about the Keystone Cops.
I mean, as good as Brandon is defensively, that's just a miss.
Well, I'm not saying that that's an easy catch to make, but to completely whiff on it and then to go by him, and it's just, you expect better from him. And that's a compliment to him more than anything. But that when that was right after the Martinez home run, you thought they were back in it. Well, they weren't. They lose 9-5. Think about this, too, with the Mets. The Dodgers beat the Mariners.
Okay. The Mariners have lost, what, how many since
seven
they...
Since they swept the Mets.
Yeah.
And they didn't just sweep the Mets. They annihilated
the Mets. They kicked
the
crap out of the Mets, and now they've lost 7 of 8 since that. They lost to the Dodgers last night. I don't have the score, but they lost to the Dodgers last night. Mets now find themselves 2.5 back of Atlanta for that third wild card spot in the National League because the Braves did go out and beat the Phillies. Shocker.
Swung on, lifted high and deep to center, though. Look out. Watch out. Rojas. Whoa. Gone. Home run. Marcel is 37th homer, is 94th RBI. Braves up 2-1.
Who needs all these injured guys? They win 3-1 last night as they beat Philadelphia. That is, Zach Wheeler made the start for the Phillies. Pitched well, 6 innings, but took the loss. Gave up 2 runs over those 6 and 8 strikeouts as well. Just quickly from football. Oof. Man, it's been rough. This has been rough. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, my God, has this been tough.
I would say the camp is much harder this year and maybe the hardest in the last 7 or 8 of my career. I knew that. I had a little insight coming into camp that that's what Robert wanted to do. So I think it's been good
for
us.
Man, those double sessions in the sweltering heat, boom. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just,
I mean, my God.
Looks rough.
Give him a raise.
Looks rough to me, man. A lot of shorts and no helmets.
It's hilarious. Giants and Jets today in a joint practice. Rodgers says today, probably a waste.
With Carolina, it wasn't like they did a whole lot. You know, so how much work did we actually get out of that? You know, I think it's good for going against somebody else, but is it actually, you know, making you better than practicing at your own team? I think it's debatable.
And remember, practicing with your own team. Woof.
Yeah,
it's woof. It's tough. It's tough. So, has he been sacked in practice yet?
I don't know if he's allowed to be touched. I don't know if the masseuse can touch him.
Right, exactly.
To be quite honest. Anyhow, so you got that with the Giants and the Jets. Coming up next hour, I will have for you, I was surprised he actually spoke. We'll have Brian Flores' response to Tua as the reporters went right to him. We'll hear from Jerry Jones next hour because that thing with CeeDee Lamb keeps going. We'll hear from Jaden Daniels next hour and more on the baseball with John and the Mets and all that.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. It's Boomer and Geo coming to you live for the Build Ford Tough Studio.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network saw on Netflix last night a new one-hour documentary pop up on Steve McNair, his life in the NFL, and of course his tragic death and how he got shot. There were some questions about that. It was ruled a murder-suicide by the girl that he was seeing, the young 20-year-old girl that he was seeing. But then there were some other questions and some other people that thought that someone else could have been involved and that the Nashville Police Department didn't do the best job with it. So you can watch that and check it out. Jeff Fisher, who we just had in here prominently in this documentary, they used a lot of Jeff Fisher stuff, and I thought he did a really good job. But I really... It's such a tragic story, and it's just the worst. But I will say I did really enjoy the football portion of this documentary because I was so locked in at that time with the NFL and all teams, not just my team, all teams. And I wasn't a Titans fan, but I loved that team. The way
Eddie George and Steve McNair,
they were so tough. Like I at the risk of sounding like, you know, one of the callers who calls up and says things will never be the same. Like, I know there's tough teams and tough players in today's game, and I don't want to make it sound like that, but like the way that that Titans team used to just pummel you, and then Steve McNair at that position, I guess the closest thing now would be Josh Allen to Steve McNair and what he did, but he used to run with the ball and put his shoulder down and just like waste linebackers and DBs.
Yeah, I did a lot of their games because they had a lot of Monday night games with Westwood One. I did their Super Bowl against the Rams.
You were in the documentary, you and Al, and you in the booth calling that Super Bowl. But
what one game that I do remember was a playoff game at Baltimore. I mean, these teams hated each other. I think Jeff Fisher and Brian Billick hated each other.
They did, yeah.
I think everybody hated Brian Billick for some reason. I'm not really sure. I like Brian Billick. He was always pretty open with me.
Yeah.
And always gave me, like, parts of the game plan, what they were looking for. So from a broadcaster standpoint, I like the guy.
Yeah.
But I think he rubbed the guy. He was like Sam Weish for the Bengals. Like, a lot of people didn't like Sam because he just rubbed them the wrong way. And the things that we were doing offensively, I think, drove people crazy. And they didn't like some of the things that we were doing on the field, so that's why he and Jerry Glenn were always fighting with each other, and Bill Cowher fighting with Sam Weish and, you know, everybody else. But, you know, thinking about Steve McNair, those games were about as physical as they got. And I always felt like Eddie George was like a combination of Eric Dickerson and like Earl Campbell.
Mm.
It was that kind of running back.
Yeah.
And he was my favorite running back to cover back in, when I was covering the league early on. In my retirement, and because I love the way that he played, and he played like that at Ohio State. And those two guys, and along with Ray Lewis, and that the way that these guys would go after each other, because they saw each other, I felt like, every year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those Titans, and then Steve McNair ended up going to
Baltimore,
the Baltimore Ravens at the end there. But, yeah, those were that 99 team, you know, it was interesting because they were talking to some of the former players, and it was there. You know, they had just gotten to Nashville. They had just been the Titans, and they just opened the new stadium, and they get the bye, and then they get the Music City Miracle that year. Then they go to the Super Bowl. And that's how they blew up in Nashville. Because in the beginning, like, it was strange back then because...
They went to Memphis first. When I was playing for the Bengals, we actually played at the Liberty Bowl against the Titans while they were in Memphis, where they were building the stadium.
When they were the
Nashville.
Tennessee Oilers at that point.
They called them
the Tennessee Oilers.
They had a quick clip of that game in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very quick clip when they were playing the Bengals in that first year.
Really? I didn't notice they were playing the Bengals. They definitely said, like, no one was there, and it was strange, and whatever.
Strange. I did not play in that game, because that was early. I did play in the game at the end of the game, and I think we scored a touchdown. And then later that year, in 97, we saw them at the end of the year, and that was the game that Jeff Fisher was referring to, where he put Corey Dillon's picture in the aquarium for Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, because Corey ran over them.
Yeah, that's right. The take on it was interesting because so it was actually in the movie Castaway where Helen Hunt? I forget. Which says to Tom Hanks when he comes back, you're not going to believe it. Nashville got a football team and they almost won the Super Bowl. And the players that they were interviewing say that was the take. Like, today it's always like they lost the Super Bowl. Like, you got there and they lost. But it was almost like they almost won it.
Yeah, I know.
So it was like a different...
I know that feeling, yes.
Right, yeah. Of course you do. But really interesting documentary. But it's so hard to sometimes. Like, I'm trying to explain to Gina why I love that team and, like, that point in my life. And she just does not care.
You know, they used to have knockdown drag out games with the Steelers, too.
Yeah, no, I know, but she was too young for that. Like, she's 3 years younger than me, so if you're talking...
Do you remember when Coach Cowher ran down an official and stuffed one of those video things?
It was one of the pictures that they had.
One of the video pictures.
Yeah. Into the guy's pants or something.
And it showed that there wasn't a penalty.
Right.
No, he shoved it in his top pocket.
That's right, okay.
I think that happened in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
I'm sorry, Stephen Waldron could find that. I remember him running down the official and just stuffing his thing. You talk about passion. That's passion.
Oh, for sure. Stephen Waldron's going to be here today, bopping around.
Oh, boy.
He's videotaping our offices. He's going to...
Oh, that's right.
Yep. So you got to stick around today.
I'm not sticking around.
You
I'm going
sticking
to...
around.
Oh, not sticking
today.
Around. Not sticking
that's
around.
That's right. Sticking around. No, boom, tour of the office. I heard you're last on the list, too. They're going to do Eddie and Al's office, and then they're going to do where Jerry hangs out, then me, and you're
but
last
because
you're the big
by
fish.
By the way, did you clean up your pigsty back there?
No, they want authentic office. No cleanup.
If they would have gotten my office prior to Martin Travers,
but
that would have been some real content.
This is why they're doing this, because we spoke about Martin Travers cleaning up your office.
According to Steven, no. This was in the works prior to that. That's what he said yesterday to me. But anyway, you obviously watched the Steve McNair thing. What did you think about the murder?
I thought it was pretty cut and dry as to what happened.
Well, what about that guy, though, in the end with the gun and the armed robbery and the attempted murder and the fact that he lied about his whereabouts and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I just...
Lied about knowing her.
There's no mystery, though. It's like he was running around with a bunch of women and...
So you don't think that guy who gave her the gun could have had something to do with it?
Maybe, but it still is like the same circumstances. You know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be a mystery around it.
No, not so much a mystery, but just the fact that if that guy did kill both of them and he's out free, that would be kind of crappy. Yeah,
that would be crappy.
Well, I mean, if somebody kills him, I'm assuming I didn't see this.
Well, they ruled it a murder-suicide.
Suicide, I'm saying. Yes. So the suicide part of it, they would be able to tell whether or not she killed herself, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most likely thing, but there is a guy out there that said he's right, that they basically just went to this guy's house and interviewed him sitting next to his fiance, the guy that the gun came from that ended up shooting McNair and then was either used on the girl or whatever.
Did he give her the gun or did he buy the gun?
He claims that he sold it to her.
Wow.
And then said that he never met her before prior to that, but meanwhile he had this long relationship with her.
Oh,
so
okay.
There was some... things that were, doesn't mean that he did it, but they didn't thoroughly investigate the guy properly. But, you know, Jeff Fisher basically said in the end of this thing, like, you know, there's some things that don't add up, but what are you supposed to do at this point now? You know, if you're someone who loves Steve McNair, now, you know, obviously you want, if someone's responsible for murdering him, you want that person to be in jail, but it's not bringing him back and... It's just tragic, and the whole thing is just horrible. And the fact that, I mean, that guy was so tough, like the toughest guy in the NFL at that point, played through every injury.
Yeah, he did.
And then ended up dying in that way. It's just the worst. Anyway, it is a good TV show, though. It's a good documentary if you're interested.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network saw on Netflix last night a new one-hour documentary pop up on Steve McNair, his life in the NFL, and of course his tragic death and how he got shot. And there were some questions about that. It was ruled a murder-suicide by the girl that he was seeing, the young 20-year-old girl that he was seeing, but then there were some other questions and some other people that thought that someone else could have been involved and that the Nashville Police Department didn't do the best job with it. So you can watch that and check it out. Jeff Fisher, who we just had in here prominently in this documentary, they used a lot of Jeff Fisher stuff, and I thought he did a really good job. But I really, it's such a tragic story, and it's just the worst. But I will say I did really enjoy the football portion of this documentary because I was so locked in at that time with the NFL and all teams, not just my team, all teams. And I wasn't a Titans fan, but I loved that team. The way
Eddie George and Steve McNair,
they were so tough. Like, I, at the risk of sounding like, you know, one of the callers who calls up and says, things will never be the same. Like, I know there's tough teams and tough players in today's game, and
oh yeah,
I don't want to make it sound like that, but like the way that Titans team used to just pummel you, and then Steve McNair at that position, I guess the closest thing now would be Josh Allen, to Steve McNair and what he did, but he used to run with the ball and put his shoulder down and just like waste linebackers and DBs.
Yeah, I did a lot of their games because they had a lot of Monday night games with Westwood One. I did their Super Bowl against the Rams.
You were in the documentary, you and Al, and you in the booth calling that Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but one game that I do remember was a playoff game at Baltimore. I mean, these teams hated each other. I think Jeff Fisher and Brian Billick hated each other.
They did, yeah.
I think everybody hated Brian Billick for some reason. I'm not really sure. I like Brian Billick. He was always pretty open with me.
Yeah.
And always gave me like parts of the game plan, what they were looking for. So from a broadcaster standpoint, I like the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think he rubbed the guy. He was like Sam Weish for the Bengals. Like a lot of people didn't like Sam because he just rubbed them the wrong way. And the things that we were doing offensively, I think, drove people crazy. And they didn't like some of the things that we were doing on the field, so that's why he and Jerry Glenn were always fighting with each other. And
yeah.
Bill Cowher fighting with Sam Weish and, you know, everybody else. But, you know, thinking about Steve McNair, those games were about as physical as they got. And I always felt like Eddie George was like a combination of Eric Dickerson and like Earl Campbell.
Mm.
It was that kind of running back.
Yeah.
And he was my favorite running back to cover back in, when I was covering the league early on. In my retirement, and because I love the way that he played, and he played like that at Ohio State. And those two guys, and along with Ray Lewis, and that the way that these guys would go after each other, because they saw each other, I felt like every year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those Titans, and then Steve McNair ended up going to
Baltimore,
the Baltimore Ravens at the end there. But yeah, those were that 99 team. You know, it was interesting because they were talking to some of the former players, and it was there. You know, they had just gotten to Nashville. They had just been the Titans, and they just opened the new stadium, and they get the bye, and then they get the Music City Miracle that year. Then they go to the Super Bowl. And that's how they blew up in Nashville. Because in the beginning, like it was strange back then because
they went to Memphis first. When I was playing for the Bengals, we actually played at the Liberty Bowl against the Titans while they were in Memphis, where they were building the stadium.
When they were the Tennessee Oilers at that point.
They called them the Tennessee Oilers.
Yeah. They had a quick clip of that game in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very quick clip when they were playing the Bengals in that first year.
Really? I didn't notice they were playing the Bengals. They definitely said like no one was there and it was strange and whatever.
Strange. I did not play in that game because that was early. I did play in the game at the end of the game. And I think we scored a touchdown. And then later that year, in 97, we saw them at the end of the year. And that was the game that Jeff Fisher was referring to where he put Corey Dillon's picture in the aquarium for Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, because Corey ran over them.
Yeah, that's right. The take on it was interesting because so it was actually in the movie Castaway where Helen Hunt? I forget. It says to Tom Hanks when he comes back, you're not going to believe it. The Nashville got a football team and they almost won the Super Bowl. And the players that they were interviewing say that was the take. Like today, it's always like they lost the Super Bowl. Like you got there and they lost, but it was always like they almost won it.
Yeah, I know.
So it was like a different.
I know that feeling. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Of course you do. But really interesting documentary. But it's so hard to sometimes. Like I'm trying to explain to Gina why I love that team and like that point in my life, and she just does not care.
You know, they used to have knockdown drag-out games with the Steelers, too.
Yeah, no, I know, but she was too young for that. Like, she's 3 years younger than me, so if you're talking...
Do you remember when Coach Cowher ran down an official and stuffed one of those video things?
It was one of the pictures that they had.
Yeah, one of the video pictures.
Yeah. Into the guy's pants or something.
And it showed that there wasn't a penalty.
Right.
No, he shoved it in his top pocket.
That's right, okay.
I think that happened in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure Stephen Waldron could find that. I remember him running down the official and just stuffing his thing. You talk about passion. That's passion.
Oh, for sure. Stephen Waldron's going to be here today, bopping around.
Oh, boy.
He's videotaping our offices. He's going to...
Oh, that's right.
Yep. So you got to stick around today.
I'm not sticking around.
Not sticking around. That's right. Sticking around. Boom, tore the office. I heard you're last on the list, too. They're going to do Eddie and Al's office, and then they're going to do where Jerry hangs out, then me, and you're last because you're the big fish. By the way,
did you clean up your pigsty back there?
No, they want authentic office. No cleanup.
If they would have gotten my office prior to Martin Travers, but that would have been some real content.
This is why they're doing this, because we spoke about Martin Travers cleaning up your office.
According to Steven, no. This was in the works prior to that. That's what he said yesterday to me. But anyway, you obviously watched the Steve McNair thing. What did you think about the murder?
I thought it was pretty cut and dry as to what happened.
Well, what about that guy, though, in the end with the gun and the armed robbery and the attempted murder and the fact that he lied about his whereabouts and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I just...
Lied about knowing her.
There's no mystery, though. It's like he was running around with a bunch of women and...
So you don't think that guy who gave her the gun could have had something to do with it?
Maybe, but it still is like the same circumstances. You know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be a mystery around it.
No, not so much a mystery, but just the fact that if that guy did kill both of them and he's out free, that would be kind of crappy. Yeah,
that would be crappy.
Well, you know? I mean, if somebody kills him, I'm assuming, I didn't see this.
Well, they ruled it a murder-suicide.
Suicide, I'm saying. Yes. So the suicide part of it, they would be able to tell whether or not she killed herself, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the most likely thing, but there is a guy out there that said he's right, that they basically just went to this guy's house and interviewed him sitting next to his fiance, the guy that the gun came from that ended up shooting McNair and then was either used on the girl or whatever.
Did he give her the gun or did he buy, she buy the gun?
He claims that he sold it to her.
Wow.
And then said that he never met her before prior to that, but meanwhile he had this long relationship with her.
Oh, okay.
So it just, there was some things that were, doesn't mean that he did it, but they didn't thoroughly investigate the guy properly. But, you know, Jeff Fisher basically said in the end of this thing, like, you know, there's some things that don't add up, but what are you supposed to do at this point now? You know, if you're someone who loves Steve McNair, now, you know, obviously you want, if someone's responsible for murdering him, you want that person to be in jail, but it's not bringing him back, and it's just tragic, and the whole thing is just horrible. And the fact that, I mean, that guy was so tough. Like the toughest guy in the NFL at that point, played through every injury.
Yeah, he did.
And then ended up dying in that way. It's just the worst. Anyway, it is a good TV show, though. It's a good documentary if you're interested.